Hi, welcome back to another Writers After Dark. We're here because good stories start with the writers, because wherever there's a story, someone's either making it up or writing it down. And my guest back for a return visit is Evan Winter. And the book is the sequel to The Rage of Dragons. The Fires of Vengeance is a healthy, hefty tome that is hard to put down, but sometimes you're reading very late into the night and you have to sleep, so you have to put it down. But it is a fun read. You know, full disclosure, I have not finished it yet. And I don't care about spoilers, so I'm going to try to drag as many out of Evan as I can. Hi, Evan.
Hey, thank you so much for having me back, Summer. A pleasure to be here. And nothing better than hearing that someone has trouble putting the book down. I absolutely love hearing that people lose a little bit of sleep over the books. That means that the job, hopefully, is going well that I'm doing. And yeah, that's nothing more satisfying than hearing that. So thank you.
I will give you a hint about the company that you are in. Other books that I have trouble putting down, I have a very bad habit of picking up the new novel by Robert Crace and starting them at 11 p.m. at night, saying, oh yeah, I'll just read for an hour or two and go to bed. And it never works out. I always end up finishing the book and it's like 4:30, 5 a.m. going, what did I just do?
Those were always my absolute favorite reading experiences. And I kid you not, when I was writing The Rage of Dragons, it was a large part of what I was trying to capture was that feeling of a book and a story that just wouldn't let go. And you'd know you're losing sleep. You'd know the next day at work or school or whatever was going to be rough. But every new page that you turned made it all worth it.
Yeah, there's just so much about the magic, not to spoil for anyone who hasn't read the first book, there are demons of a certain persuasion haunting the land, controlling the people, being controlled by other people, and there's sort of a war or two going on. And not only is the environment captivating, the characters feel like they're breathing. They're living right there on the page. And you can't help but connect with some of them, and you want to know what's going to happen to them or what are they going to do next. And that combination of a wonderful world-building experience combined with characters who you start to really care about quickly is a rare and beautiful thing. So thank you for that.
And thank you very much for saying it. I mean, for me, all the people in the story live and breathe in my head. But because I'm an outliner and I'm trying to sort of pass the story from my head onto the page, I often worry that I'm missing some aspect of the way that I see them because I'm sort of really looking at the plot and the story, and that's what I'm trying to tell. And so it's very important for me to sort of make sure that the people that I'm sort of having this, I'm in conversation with regards to the story, come out on the page. So I'm glad to hear they feel that way to you. That's absolutely fantastic to hear. Thank you.
You're welcome. Because sometimes, like, you'll read a story and it takes a little longer for you to connect with the character. Like, it takes like an incident or maybe a side of them you hadn't seen before to connect with. But some of these characters are either frightening or frightened, or just somehow emotionally slightly, I'm going to say, a curiosity. And you start to go, what is this person doing? And that little bit of curiosity is how it feels like you're being pulled in. They do something that you're trying to identify and they hook you and they drag you along their story with them. And for me, that's a lot of fun because you have characters, some stand out, many don't. And it's trying to find out, for me, as someone who loves stories, I try to find out, what's the difference between this story and this story? Why does this story connect with me so much more deeper than this other story? Both of them are critically acclaimed books. Both of them are by renowned authors, but one affects me differently than the other. And that's why I keep talking to all these authors and writers and directors and comics writers, because I want to know, how did this one person get this story so on the nose and this other story kind of missed in a place or two?
Yeah, I'm a firm. I totally hear what you're saying. And it's always, I guess, as a reader, that search for those stories that really connect with what we maybe need or looking for, and that the things that we didn't even know we were looking for that we need. And I'm a firm believer in sort of the subjectivity of reading, and how we all come to books with our worldviews, lived experience, preferences, you know, all of that is what we take into each individual read. And to that point, I don't even really believe in sort of guilty pleasures with reading or TV shows or anything, because if I enjoy it, I enjoy it. And there's probably a reason that I'm connecting with the material. I'm very much about the idea of sort of letting subjectivity be a thing that's okay, because I think that really is how it works for all of us. And one person's fantastic, perfect, 5-star, great read can for another person not connect at all. And again, it depends so much on who the reader is and what they're looking for and what they need.
So what is it that makes you eager, or just what are you trying to channel when you're trying to create that story? Because you said, I mean, you are connecting with the stories you're writing yourself. Are you doing anything extra to make sure that those connections are also felt by people who aren't living the writing of that story like you are?
To be completely honest, no. And I think that the reason for that is, I hope not even selfish. It's just that for any attempt on my part to try and create that bridge to somebody else that I don't know and personally and very, very intimately is just my attempt to approximate some other human being's lived experience, some other human being's life. And I think that that's a dangerous road, at least in my opinion, for me to walk down, because it's too easy to try then to start talking down to people. It's too easy to try and be glib about things that might be very important or critical to their understanding of the world. So instead, my personal approach is to tell the story that I need, that I love, and then to hope the publisher can find the readers for whom that material will connect. My goal is to... my goal is to tell a story that means something to me, that lets me ask questions about the world and the human condition that are sort of rolling around in my head that I need answers to. And again, so far I've got 2 books written, and I don't get the answers from the books, but the asking of the question, the exploration of the question, definitely makes me feel like the life that I'm living is a more full and more rounded life. It makes me feel more centered as I move through each day. So the writing is almost acts as therapy for me. So again, I don't necessarily consider or write for anyone else. I write for myself, fully believing that there are enough human beings out there for whom the questions I'm asking will also be important.
And how does that impact your editor? The work that needs to be done to polish what is already to me a rather rich, detailed, mildly glorious world into something that makes people just literally their jaws hit the ground when they're reading it.
Yeah, thank you. I think that the most important thing for me was that I self-published initially. So it was sort of really scary for me to sort of take and sign that traditional publishing contract, because I was very concerned about what it would mean to work with an editor who has acquired the novel, acquired the series, and what they might want to do with the story, and how they would sort of interpret and take it. And to very pleasantly, I found, and that my editor Brie has no interest in trying to change the story I'm trying to tell at all. And perhaps all editors across the board do this. I'm not sure, but Brie's goal very much seems to be to help me, to the very best of all her abilities, considerable abilities, help me tell the very best version of the story that I'm already trying to tell. And so it's like, I worried that coming into traditional publishing might mean that there was a group of, a sort of a corporate group that comes around and then tries to say, well, how do we make sure that we can sell the most copies no matter what it takes? That hasn't been my experience. It's been more like, we already believe in this. That's why we bought it. So how do we help the writer do the very best version of what they are already doing?
So there was no grounded fears of the story being homogenized to reach a quote wider audience.
No, and again, that is a great question because that was legitimately my fear and concern. I was like, I don't know how this works. I know they want to sell a certain amount of copies to recoup investment. I know that given all the overheads they have, traditional publishers as sort of corporate entities want to, they need to sell books, they want to sell books. And you often hear about the idea of sort of the lowest common denominator for, again, TV shows, movies, and maybe books. But that's not been my experience. And perhaps one of the saving graces that books have over maybe a large $100 million movie is that they don't cost that much to make produce. It's not $100 million that you're looking at, not at all. So the audience that they need to capture in order to make sort of the business side of the industry work isn't that doesn't need to be nearly so large. And so they can let authors tell the stories that are in their hearts. Again, I'm not sure if that's how it works for everybody else, but that has definitely been my experience. And if anyone sort of listening has that fear about traditional publishing, I would say that again, in my experience, it was unfounded. It wasn't the case. And there is an advantage to there's a huge advantage to self-publishing. It offers lots of options, but there are advantages to traditional publishing. And definitely, if someone's a writer, they should explore both if possible.
Well, I know that one of the perks of working with a traditional publisher is access to fantastic cover artists, and I thought the cover for Rage of Dragons was stunning. The cover for Fires of Vengeance surpasses that, and I am floored by the detail and the, shall we say, the background images and the fearsome visage on the cover is just, I want a print of all three covers without the text on them when this trilogy is done. And I just want to make sure, is it just three books or is it more?
I have a bonus for you. It's going to be four in the end, so you might even be able to get all four prints. And a quick story about the cover. I loved the cover that Orbit did for The Rage of Dragons. They managed to find and have Carla Ortiz, who's a brilliant concept artist, illustrator, just artist in general. They got her to work on The Rage of Dragons cover with alongside Lauren Panapinto, who's Orbit's creative director. And she did a fantastic job on Rage of Dragons, the Rage of Dragons cover. And then they got her back for Fires of Vengeance. And I remember the day that the email from Orbit came into my inbox, and it was, "Hey, Evan, here's the early draft version of the Fires of Vengeance cover. Let us know what you think." And I opened the email, and you're always worried about these days. You're always worried, is this going to be something I'm going to love or not? Now, I'd already worked with Carla, so I knew it was going to be good. But I opened the email, going, "Okay, what's going to?" And I saw the cover, and like lean back in my chair, like, "Oh my gosh, yes." So I'm a big, big fan of Carla Ortiz's work. I'm a big, big fan of both covers that have been made for the series so far. And I also feel very fortunate for that. Like, it's not always the case that you love your covers. It's a tricky thing because Orbit has to balance reader expectations for the book, trying to create an image that is marketable that they can put on the shelves next to every other book in epic fantasy that can help the book sell. There are so many concerns that have to sort of be matched up against one another. And I just feel like I got so lucky because I'm such a big fan of the covers.
Well, I think Orbit needs to plan ahead. to make some sort of limited edition landscape print of all four covers side by side, you know, without the cover text on them, just the artwork in general. I would get in line for that, just saying, because these, like I said, the first two are stunning.
Not gonna lie, I'd be in line for that too. I'm all about, like, I'm looking forward to having all four when they're done. I guess I have to write all four books first though, so there's a bit of work that has to happen before, but I'm very much looking forward to having them all and like putting them up in the office or something, because again, a big fan of Carla Ortiz's work and the job that she has done on the series.
Well, I don't want to delve into any territory that you can't officially talk about yet, but can we expect book three around the same time next year?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, I think we're not going to fall too far off of that sort of a one a year schedule. It's still the actual release date for book three is still up in the air, but it won't be dramatically different from where we are now. Book two releases in a couple days, so November the 10th in the US, and I believe it's November 12th in the UK. So it's just, you know, we're really close there now, and book three will be roughly the same time.
Cool. So how has the story crafting for book three and the ideas for book four going for you? Is this lining up exactly as you had imagined?
That is also a great question and a tricky one. I think here's what I'll say. The story has not changed at all. The broad strokes, the idea of where it's going. And I'm very excited about all the big sort of scenes that are coming up in book three and book four. Like it's a weird thing, because when you write a series that's either one of two, three, four books long, there are so many things that you're waiting to do. And I'm so eager to get them onto the page and then sort of present them to the readers. But at the same time, we're sitting here in November of 2020, and the world has gone through kind of like a bit of a meat grinder. And so much of what's happened in the past year has sort of influenced what is to come into writing. And not to change the story, it doesn't change the characters, all the stuff that I'd originally planned is still there, but just sort of the undertone, sort of the not the themes exactly, but kind of like if it was a painting, just sort of the undertones and the color of the paint. It's sort of adjusting so much of that, because I feel as if I'm learning so much over the past few months in the past year. It's almost as if I've been put in a crucible. All of us have been put in a bit of a crucible. And unfortunately, we get to see what happens when humanity is sort of pressured in this way. And I'm trying to take as much of the truth out of the way that we are as humans and put it into the writing, so that hopefully when readers come to books three and four, they see those added elements of sort of truth. They see those added elements of humanity that they can very definitively recognize as feeling real to life.
Nice. I literally can't wait. This is it. Book two so far has been a richer read because of what I enjoyed about book one. So you're just getting me more eager to read book three.
Thank you. And I, you know what? I mean, it's wonderful to hear too, because you always want to be moving in only that one direction and hopefully having the work become richer and feel richer to the reader. So I hope I can always continue to go in that direction. I hope that I get to continue learning more and more. And again, with COVID and with sort of having to be more physically distanced, that we can't go to conventions and all the rest, one tiny advantage, given all the horrible things that have happened, one tiny advantage that I've noticed is I get to do so many more virtual events. I get to talk to so many more people just like you and we're doing here right now, that I have an opportunity to learn from other authors, even in panels or interviews, because I can do so many more than I would otherwise have been able to do. So although there is that sort of weird isolating thing that's happening right now, there's a sense of community that I still get to feel like I have, and a sense of sort of sharing of craft and sharing of learning that I very, very much appreciate, and that is completely dependent on the fact that we have the technologies we have today. So trying to, I guess perhaps this is me trying very hard to see the silver lining in this sort of awful storm cloud.
Well, are you working on any other stories or more stories in this universe in a different medium, hint, hint, graphic novel prequels?
Ha, you're not the first person to mention graphic novels. And you know what? I think that would be absolutely fantastic. It would be so, so cool to see this visually in that way. And I'm totally, totally open to it. Currently, I'm sort of super focused on just getting the four books done. And I know some other author friends, and they can work on one series and still throw out some novellas on the side and maybe have another series going on the back burner. And I have no idea how they do it. I admire that. That's incredible to me. Like, the series that I'm working on right now just feels all consuming. And even when I'm not actively writing, it's just, it's there in my head. I'm doing the dishes and sort of character moments or character lines are coming to me. I'm in the shower and the same thing happens. I have to hop out as fast as I can, dry off, and try and grab my phone and write the notes down. So the series feels very all-consuming, and I kind of enjoy that. I enjoy that the only thing in my head in terms of work is this world and these people. So, but I love that. I think it makes it a more pleasant experience for me, given the type of writer I am. But I guess the downside is it does make me a bit slower, because I see some of my sort of my compatriots, and they're just blasting out the words, and I'm like, how are you doing that?
Well, I empathize with you, because I am not a fast writer myself, and sometimes I wish I were, because it seems like the story, you know, some you get those moments where the story or what you're trying to say is going through your head so fast you don't know how you're going to write it down fast enough to keep up with what your brain's thinking. And it's just to hear other authors have that same issue sometimes, I go, oh, cool, it's not just me.
No, definitely not just you, because I'm pretty much firmly in that camp as well.
Now, you said Fires of Vengeance comes out on November 10th. Does that go for ebook and audiobook as well?
It goes for ebook and hardcover. The audiobook is going to be coming out in mid-December. And so thankfully, we have Prentice Onoyemi back. Prentice was the voice of The Rage of Dragons. And he is one of my favorite narrators, bar none. I absolutely love his voice. I love the fact that he brings stories to life. He's a theater background. And he brings stories to life with his voice. I listened to The Rage of Dragons just right after he handed it in, and I got to experience my own story in a completely different way that made it sort of fuller for me. And it was such a pleasant thing to be able to do that and then go into writing book two. And I actually, as I'm writing book three, I plan to do that again. As soon as I have his version, I'm going to listen to it as I'm writing book three, because it gives me, it's almost like another opportunity and another sort of look at the work that I'm already doing, sort of another perspective on it. So I'm very much a big, big fan of the audiobook format. I think that it's an excellent way to sort of take in literature. And I feel so good that Prentice is the narrator that we have on the books and that he's coming back.
It sounds to me like you're viewing the audiobook as sort of like an adaptation of your work that you get to more easily separate from to enjoy it more.
I love that you use the word adaptation. I completely see it that way. And I think that it's not always the case, perhaps, with every narrator, but the work that Prentice Onoyemi does definitely is sort of an adaptation. And so, yeah, it's I very, very much appreciate what he does. And I remember when we were sort of discussing narrators and trying to pick someone that we could use, you know, I sort of had mentioned Prentice to Orbit, and they were like, fantastic, let's see if we can get him. And then they could, and they managed to sort of have him, bring him onto the project. And like, it's such a joy, because I listened to Prentice's work at least nonfiction work. Like I just recently listened to a nonfiction book that he was the narrator for, and finished that just about a couple weeks ago. So whenever, like, I'm actually a fan. Whenever his new, whenever he narrates anything, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna hop on that. So yeah, like, I feel very lucky to have him doing the work here for the series.
Cool. So, what have you been doing for fun and decompression during these stressful times?
Oh man, what do I do to decompress? You know what? My son is now just old enough that we can watch a lot of shows that we can both enjoy. So we watched all of The Flash together. We're watching Smallville together now, which is something that I was kind of watching when it was coming out, and I get to enjoy it again with him. Just two nights ago, we finished Terminator 2, and shortly before that, Terminator 1. So I get to sort of introduce him to all of my kind of favorites. And it's a wonderful time as a parent to be able to experience all of that with him. And almost every night we sit down and we watch like a show or a movie. And I feel it's just so awesome to sort of share the things that I loved. Now, when I'm sort of more on my own, I also play a video game. I play League of Legends, mm-hmm. kind of badly, but I play that. Sort of those are the two things that I tend to primarily do to kind of just decompress.
Cool. Well, tell our listeners where they can find you online to keep up with your writing exploits and, you know, your video game progress.
Oh no, you definitely do not want to watch my video game progress, because that is I'm pretty bad. I mean, for people who play League of Legends, I am in silver, which is a kind of, it goes like silver, gold, platinum, it keeps going up, and I am near the bottom there. So I enjoy it, but I'm pretty bad. But otherwise, if you just want to know where you can find me, on Twitter, I'm at Evan Winter, and that's probably where I'm the most active. Instagram at Evan M. Winter. And I'm trying to get, I don't naturally connect to the Instagram as a platform as much, but at the same time, there's such a strong bookstagramming kind of mm-hmm. community there. And they're so eager for the books, and I get to learn about other books, and I love seeing gorgeous covers, and that's where you go to really get that kind of thing. So I'm trying to understand and be more sort of savvy on Instagram as well.
Well, I have become a new fan of book Twitter. The number of people that pile on the happy book birthday thing is a joy to watch. Seeing so many authors being so supportive and just so joyous about other authors' books coming out. It's like every Tuesday there's a new just one gleaming, shining light of pure joy at the thought of a new book or a new author debuting a book is a lot of fun to see. It's a bright, shining spot in the dumpster fire that is Twitter.
Absolutely, 100% agree.
Well, Evan, I will have those links to where people can find you on social media and links to where people can find Fires of Vengeance when it comes out and later the audiobook. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me on a second time. It's always wonderful to speak with you, and I really appreciate the love that you're showing for the books, and again, for just taking the time to have this conversation. Thank you for that.
Hey there, Mer Lafferty, co-editor of Escape Pod here, and I just wanted to let you know, if you are listening to this podcast right now, then you probably would enjoy our very first print anthology. Escape Pod, our 15th anniversary print anthology, will feature a mix of stories, some of which have been on the site, some are reprints that may be new to you, and some are brand new stories from people like T. Kingfisher, Maurice Broaddus, Greg Van Eekout, and our own Tina Connolly. I also contributed a story featuring the universe from my book, Six Wakes. So if you are in the UK, you can get your copy October 20th, and if you're in the US, you can get your copy on November 17th. But check it out, we're pretty proud. and what we've done with this, just like we're pretty proud with what we've done with this entire podcast for the past 15 years.
There are so many stories that are coming out, fantasy, space opera, that don't fit the typical mold that I grew up with. Stories from the 80s and 90s that seemed sometimes to fall into a cookie cutter pattern, and now we're getting a wider range of voices, of story ideas. And it's both glorious and frustrating because I don't have enough time to read all the books or watch all the movies, but I will try. I will do my best. I'm so far behind on the cool comics, it's not even funny. And I love graphic novels. I love the collections, because trying to remember which week of the month a particular book is coming out, I gave up on monthly floppy comic books a long time ago. I would love to do something more to support some of the books that I love, you know, without having to wait 6 months to a year for a 5, 6, 7, or 8 issue graphic novel collection to come out. I love it if when an issue one goes on sale, if a comics publisher, now an indie publisher might be able to do this easier than Marvel or DC, but if they would say, hey, if you want to pre-order a 6-issue graphic novel collection of this title, let me do it when issue 1 or issue 2 comes out. I would put in a pre-order for a lot of these things. And I don't know. I wonder who I could talk to about that. I wonder if they'd even listen. Anyway, if you have any questions or comments about fantasy, space opera, horror, what stories you love to read, print, ebook, audiobook, let me know. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can shoot me an email, summer@writersafterdark.com. You can listen to Writers After Dark on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Google Podcasts, and Player FM. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Your comments might inspire someone else to check the show out. And for that, we thank you in your efforts to help signal boost the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Write After Dark. That's WRITE After Dark. And of course, there's the curated playlist of creator interviews over on the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/sliceofsci-fi. I'd like to thank everyone who is helping support this show and others in this little genre playground of mine. We have writersafterdark.com. We have sliceofsci-fi.com. We have babylonpodcast.com, charliej.net, and so many others. And your donations through PayPal and Patreon do help keep all of that online. So for that, I thank you. You have my heartfelt gratitude. If you'd like to help support the efforts here, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. Or if a monthly pledge is not something you want to commit to at the moment, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. And just a reminder, we have lots of books and DVDs and Blu-rays and 4K movies to thank all of our patrons with. Every month I pick a lucky email address out of the hat, and find out what that person wants. We have all sorts of stuff. I have a lot of a lot of DC animated features here, some CW shows, a lot of advanced copies of books from 2019 and before that need new homes. Because yes, I am running out of space for all this cool stuff. And you, the supporters, the fans, the listeners of Writers After Dark, Slice of Sci-Fi, Babylon podcast, you all, you're first in line to get this stuff because you have supported these shows for so many years. And again, my heartfelt thanks. The music here is provided by Cybin Quest featuring Shay Dawn. If you want to check out other compositions of theirs, the links are on the website. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time. And remember, keep looking for your own stories.